professor of radiology and emergency medicine here. I was in the fourth medical school last year. So I graduated in 62.
Nicholson, I'm sorry to interrupt. Do you think I can... Oh.
How do I do make it go next?
All right, just...
On me, so.
Yes. You're good to go.
Okay. And you just put the next one up? Okay. Most of these are reasonably straightforward. This is a classic finding of an epidural hematoma. There are four kinds of traumatic bleeds in the head. There's subdural, there's epidural, there's subarachnoid, and the last one is DAI, diffuse axonal injury. But DAI is an MR diagnosis. It's not one that we use immediately. A biconvex deformity is the classic epidural. You read, as some of you are not that far from medical school, you read about the period of unconsciousness, and then the period where they get lucid again, and then the period where they kind of fade away. The lady, the actress who died of Mount Tremblant from the ski accident, was a classic epidural. Now, I've skied in the Grey Rocks. I've skied in the Laurentians. I do not know why they didn't get a CAT scan on this lady. She was a classic finding. Epidural hematomas are almost always... fractures, in this case, middle meningeal artery, and the fracture is here somewhere. This is, all right, next. This is the classic epidural. This is the next one. You see a blood collection alongside, but following the dura. This is, the dura is actually pushed away. This is a subdural hematoma. Okay? Now, there's much more to see here. Number one, where's the ventricular system on the other side? You don't see it. Number two, this is the falx. There's herniation under the falx. And three, this is a markedly dilated occipital horn, frontal horn of the lateral ventricles. So this is not only a subdural, but it's a subdural with massive herniation. Now, there are two different kinds of cranial herniation. There's subfalcial and there's uncal herniation. This one you can survive. Uncal herniation, you really don't. Okay? Next. This is something which is sort of going the way of the dodo. Plain films of the cervical spine are really not used much anymore. And the answer is very simple. If you think there might be anything, anything, get a CAT scan. Now, there's the famous line of what is ABC of medicine? Airway, breathing, CAT scan. That's the way thinking goes today. You will miss 20 to 30% of fractures of cervical spine on plain film. Not as bad as it sounds, because you'll pick up one, you won't pick up a second. But in order to do a full cervical spine series, which is AP lateral and open mouth, takes about a half hour. Takes about a minute to do one, to do a CT scan of the cervical spine. Yes, it's more expensive, but not all that much, because these are done without contrast. How to read it? Okay, since I was brought up with it, I'll do it. What you do first is look at the base of the skull and see whether or not there's a fracture. Then you look at the mandible and see whether or not there's a fracture. Then, and only after you've looked at everything else, you go to the cervical spine. There you go to the famous three lines, the anterior vertebral line, the posterior vertebral line, and the so-called spinal lamina line, where the lamina get together to fuse the spinous process. I'm not going into anatomy with you. I also took anatomy at the Albert Einstein College of Medicine. I didn't remember it then. I remember it now only because I have no choice. What else? Those three lines in a line. The second thing you want to look for is the dens. C1 is an arch, and the odontoid peg comes up. The only number I live with is between the anterior arch of C1 and the odontoid should be no more than 3 millimeters. If it's more given trauma, there's a fracture. If it's more not given trauma, what do you think of? Anybody? I don't hear great, but I hear a lot of silence. Rheumatoid arthritis. If you see widening of C1, C2 without a history of trauma, think of rheumatoid arthritis. Okay? In this case, and the pictures are not coming up very well on here, but in this case, the C2 pedicle is shifted posteriorly. Give me the next film. Next. And on the CT scan, you can see that this is backwards and there's a fracture through here, through C2. Now, there are three eponym fractures of the cervical spine. There is a second-year ER resident, now a second-year, who I had as a student here, who had finished the first year, and I had her for 1 month, and for 1 month she insisted I not use any eponyms. Well, that's fine, except that some people live with them. And since she's not in the room, and her name is Moira, and since Moira is not here, I can use eponyms. But anyone goes downstairs and finds her, don't tell her that I used eponyms. Anyway, the three fractures are the burst fracture of C1 where the lateral masses move out. And that's called should I play the game? I did this once with Einstein medical students. And if you want to be embarrassed, I said, who was the first president of the United States? And most of them knew Washington. And I said, and who was second? And about 50% knew John Adams. And I said, and who was third? And the silence was deafening. And the third was Jefferson. And then Madison and Monroe and so forth. I was a history major in college, so I cheated. In any case, the burst fracture of C1 is a Jefferson fracture. The fracture through the posterior element of C2 is the so-called hangman's fracture. And the fracture spinous process, C6, C7, T1, is the clay shoveler's fracture. And the term came from the putting the drunks to work during the Depression, building the railroads in Australia first, then England and Germany, lifting up the heavy shovelfuls of clay. And whether it was just the pressure or they hit themselves on the neck, I don't know. But that became the clay shoveler's fracture. Okay, next. Again, these films are not showing up very well. There is a fracture through the vertebral body here. You'll see it a little better. And you see the smooth, dense line anteriorly and posteriorly of the vertebral bodies. That's known as DISH, diffuse idiopathic sclerosing hyperostosis. Sounds very impressive. It's not. It's just another way of saying degenerative change in a portion. Four vertebral bodies, normal disc space, anterior and posterior fusion. That's called DISH, or, if you like eponyms, for Forestier's disease. Next. And here is the fracture through the vertebral body. Okay? Now, can you see that on a CT scan? This is a CT scan. You can CT it in coronal, sagittal, and AP projections. You can redo it. You can reconstruct it. You can maneuver it in any different way. It is so much easier to see subtle fracture on CT scan than it is on plain film. That up until the first day of the month, this month, we were doing almost none. But we got a new group of interns and a new group of people in the ER, and it'll take me time to talk them out of doing these studies. I'll do it, but it'll take me a little time. Okay, next. Okay, here is a study that also should be gone the way of the dodo, but isn't always. And these are two images of facial bones. Now, facial bones, there are two reasons to do it. The most common one is trauma. And trauma to facial bones, we used to call it a tripod fracture, meaning lateral margin of the orbit, floor of orbit, and region of ZF suture, or zygomatical frontal suture, or the zygoma itself. Three was called a tripod, four was called a four fracture. Now it's called trimalar or quadrimalar. And now that I learned that, they changed the name again. This was not done for that. But, and this is the famous Lafort fractures. Everyone remember the Lafort fractures from medical school? Lafort fracture was the midline skull fracture. Lafort was a French gentleman who took skulls and bounced them off tables. And if you had a midline fracture, went below the nose, it was a 1. Above and around the nose was a 2. And all the way out to the lateral margin of the orbits was a 3. And 3, you pulled the face away from the skull. Classic Laforts are uncommon because they're midline. But it's all CT scan. And I don't know, we've had Bob Noveline speak here a number of times. There's a surgical trauma conference here. And Bob Noveline is the chief of emergency radiology at Mass General. And he can play games and turn things and spin them. And it's unbelievably impressive until you realize you don't really need it most of the time. But he's able to do it and make them up. In this case, they were looking for sinusitis. Now, how do you read sinusitis? Well, sinusitis depends on where. Are you talking about the sphenoid sinus? I'm sorry. The maxillary sinus, you're talking about the ethmoid sinus, you're talking about the frontal sinus. Now, you don't need an x-ray to call frontal sinusitis, folks, provided you will lower yourself to actually touch the patient. All you really have to do is push. And if they're febrile and tender, you've got sinusitis. Plain and simple. But not everyone works that way. So, if you see these are the maxillary antra. This is the ethmoid. This little white line, I hate to bore you with anatomy, but you just have to know some. This little white line is the lamina papyrusae, or paper thin. That's the wall of the ethmoid. And this is the frontal sinus. And you get density in the frontal sinus, and on the lateral view, there's an air fluid level. An air fluid level means fluid in the maxillary, in the sinus. That's active disease. If you're worried about neoplasm and bone destruction, you're looking for just that, bone destruction. And that has to be CT'd. You can only go so far with a plain film. But this is frontal sinusitis. Okay, next. Okay, this is one of the I don't want you to miss it team. What's up there that I don't want you to miss? Pneumo. Pneumothorax, which is air in the pleural space. Cause, pneumothorax. And there are books on chest pain. I think I read when I did medicine 10 million years ago. But basically, it's rupture of a bullus or a bleb in a young patient. In this case, this is the right middle and upper lobe collapsed. This is the right lower lobe collapsed. And there is the pleural line of a pneumothorax. But it's more than that. What's this? Fluid level. Air fluid level. You see a fluid level, it's a hydropneumothorax. This has got to be tubed. Now, grant you, what you do is see what kind of symptoms the patient has and then decide what you're going to do with it. But this is a hydropneumothorax. Okay, next. I just said pneumothorax, which is true enough. They are not all, oh, I wasn't up to this yet. They are not all at the apex. They can be anywhere around the chest. You can have them just above the diaphragm. You can have them alongside the mediastinum. You could have them at the apex. And, all right, reading the chest x-ray, there were, I don't know, should I give them the rules? The Nathanson rules of the emergency room? Half the people here are laughing because they know what they are. There are seven rules. Rule one, if it's bilateral and symmetrical, it's normal or very, very bad. Rule two, policemen are normal. Rule three, firemen are... No, firemen are positive. They're very macho. They don't come in, at least in my era, they didn't come in unless they really hurt. Four, pregnant ladies with positive tuberculin tests are all normal. If they have a positive tuberculin test, they must have a chest film to prove they haven't got active tuberculosis. In 22 years since I've been back, I've yet to have a positive. Can happen, but it's very unusual. Rule six, if the patient's over 90, don't push it. They got there 90 years without your help. Make sure it's real, if you're calling it. And rule seven, which is the most important rule, don't piss off Dr. Nathan. Okay. Those are the seven rules of the emergency room. But basically, when you're reading a chest film, and I'm not going to show you normal and go through it, because that's a whole lecture in and of itself. But basically, look one side to the other. Compare side to side. That's very, very useful on a chest. Less so on an abdomen, but certainly on a chest. Because the lungs should be essentially equal. Okay. Here you've got an elevated left hemidiaphragm. That's normal. That is not free air. On the right side, you don't see a diaphragm. And you see, well, you can call it whatever you will. The magic word is often infiltrate. But nobody really knows what infiltrate means. What it really means is alveolar density. What it really means is fluid in the alveoli. And fluid in the alveoli comes in three flavors. Pneumonia, pulmonary edema, and pulmonary contusion. Remember those three. Pneumonia, pulmonary edema, pulmonary contusion. Okay? Now the story counts. Was the patient in an accident? Did the patient have trauma? Is the patient febrile? Did the patient have a white count? Or is he in pulmonary edema? Okay, in this case, patchy, alveolar density. You don't see the diaphragm. That's probably a pleural effusion, but there's extensive patchy density here. Okay, next. Well, we really don't need this, but this is air bronchogram, the famous air bronchogram you all heard about in medical school. Air bronchogram means air around the air. The bronchus has air in it, and there's alveolar density around the bronchus. That air bronchogram is classic for pneumonia. This lung is essentially clear. Here is an extensive lower lobe pneumonia with air bronchogram. Okay, next. Now, on this one, you can see a rounded rim here. Now, your question should be, is that a pneumothorax? The answer is no. That's a huge bullous or bleb because you can see lung tissue behind it and through it. It's actually here, right in there. What's going on? Is everyone getting beat constantly?
Yes.
Jesus. All right. Now, that reminds me when I was an intern at Maimonides Hospital and there were 20, well, what, maybe 40 interns and residents in one room. and one phone. And someone got stuck with sleeping next to the phone, which never stopped ringing. Did a mixed medical internship. I played the game, sort of. Anyway, in addition to that, look at this side. Look behind the heart. See how dense it is behind the heart. You must compare side to side. This density is lung tissue that's compressed. This side, it's patchy density behind the heart. Next. Left lower lobe, pneumonia. Okay. This is what they call in the house of God an LOL. Everyone know what an LOL is? An LOL, this young lady is spending 2 weeks with me and she knows all the secrets. An LOL is a little old lady. And little old ladies are the patients you see who are about 3 feet tall and are all bent over and have clear lung fields and tiny hearts. And if you read the book, you'll know that you can't kill the little old ladies. They just survive. And there's nothing you can do to make them expire or get better. They just stay there. And there are no little old men. And why are there no little old men? You know, they have had it. They have been around. They have been married to these little old ladies for all these years. They have done their time. Especially applies to Jewish little old men. Okay, all kidding aside. This was the ladies in the ICU. This is spine orthopedic hardware. That's the central line. Every day I would see the same film. Every day I would see the same spine. Every day I would see the same line. This little thing with the prongs in it took me 3 weeks to figure out what this is. I kept describing it. It would go here, it would be up there, be over there, be over there. Turns out to be a coil in a heating blanket. Wherever it happens to be. But it took me 3 months to get up enough guts to go up to the ICU, say, all right, I've had it. What the hell is it? But I noticed after a reasonable period of time that there was a widening of the left superior mediastinum. Now, the right superior mediastinum is almost always vascular. But the left superior mediastinum is usually not widened. And after the first however many months I looked at this, I said, wait a minute, that's getting bigger. And that should not get bigger. So sure enough, we CT'd it, and next, this turns out to be a Pankos tumor. Now, no, you want to go back one? A Pankos tumor is a lung apex tumor. Who was Pankos? Henry Pankos was the chief of radiology at HUP, Hospital of the University of Pennsylvania. His grandfather was a Union surgeon at Gettysburg. And if any of you are military history buffs and go to Gettysburg, there's a plaque to Dr. Pankos on one of the fences. On one of the walls in Gettysburg. Anyway, when you see a lesion like this, the first thing you have to do is look to see if there's bone destruction. Because if there's bone destruction, then it's a much different story than if it's not. We used to feel this was a incurable lung tumor. And my father, who was a radiologist, took a year at Penn working on it, what now would be called a fellowship. And Pankos used to say, if you're going to name something after me, does it have to be an incurable lung tumor? It isn't quite as incurable now as they used to think. Okay, next. All right. One of the problems with reading chest x-rays on reasonably young females is breast shadow. Because the breast shadow can fake you out all the time. Now, not every female is totally symmetric. And if you read enough mammograms, you certainly see that. But if one is a little dense and one is a lot of dense, then you have to say, wait a minute, is there something else going on? And in this case, there's just too much patchy density at the right base compared to the left. And this is the right lower lobe pneumonia. Now, the other way to do it is if you follow the spine down, it should get more and more lucent as you get lower. If it doesn't, then you have to think of lower lobe disease. Okay, next. This turns out to be an HIV player. HIV, I try to teach our residents, overread the chest x-ray. Why do I say that? Because the subtle changes of PCP are just that. They can be subtle. The classic PCP with the fine nodules all over the place, indistinct nodules, fine. Anybody can do that. But the earlier stages are unusual. Now, why did I put this in? Because there's old fibrocalcific disease up here, which goes along with tuberculosis. Not active TB, but TB. Just means she had exposure to it. Again, they're dying out, but the people from the old country who are in the camps, almost all were exposed to tuberculosis. Next. Okay. Chest x-ray. What stands out? What looks different? Anybody? Right? Big gazumba there. Mediastinum looks a little wide, a little prominent nose on this side too, but much more on this side. Diaphragm, elevated diaphragm means there's probably a little volume loss on this side. Some patchy density at the base, somewhat less on the other side. When you see hyaluronopathy like this on both sides, your mind should slip right into one thing. What is it? Sarcoid, absolutely. This is sarcoid till proven otherwise. Well, what about what about lymphoma? What about a hyalur mass, hyalur nodes, and malignancy? Yeah, absolutely could be. Absolutely could be. Especially if one side is much bigger than the other. Classic sarcoid nodes, or potato nodes as they were called, were separate from the mediastinum, whereas lymphoma was socked into the mediastinum. Does that work all the time? No. Nothing works all the time. For those of you who are just starting, if the question starts, is it possible that, the answer is yes. If they ask you, can that happen, the answer is yes. Somewhere, someone will have reported it. Whatever it is. So, I went through medicine here too. I played the game. Not, I wasn't your level, I was just a student. Anyway, I don't know if I got students. Are there any medical students here? There are some. Well, you're my level. Anyway, sarcoid is the great mimic. Sarcoid can be look like anything. That's the part of it. If you see a chest film like this, you say lymphoma, and you're absolutely right, or you got to scratch your chin and say, could be sarcoid. Could be sarcoid. We had a chief resident 2 years ago, an Orthodox Jewish gentleman with a beard, and he had it down to a science. He would always scratch his head and say, could be sarcoid, Dr. Nathan. Said, yeah, could always be sarcoid. Anyway, the point is, next picture. Here's just a CT. You see the huge mass, but it's socked into the mediastinum, which would make it a little harder to be so sure that it's not something more significant. But this turned out to be sarcoid. Okay, next. Okay, this is mean, but it goes back to what I said in the beginning. Bilateral and symmetrical. This was trauma. I read this as normal. And then one of my associates came to me and said, look, this side's a little bit denser than the other. Ah, come on, you're making nothing out of nothing. I said, no, it really is. Next picture. Oh, I'm sorry. You know, I got to go back. This is denser. You really can't see them well. You see the little circles here? Little round circles? That's bronchiectasis. That's saccular bronchiectasis, and often they'll have fluid in them. And how much fluid depends on when they coughed last. And you're all going to have clinic, and you're all going to have patients with bronchiectasis. It's not at all uncommon. Okay, next. This is the one, I think, with the density at the left apex. Next. On the CT scan of the spine for trauma, you could see the contusion in the left upper lobe, which is what that was. That's pulmonary contusion. This was a CT scan of the cervical spine. I read the chest film as normal. It's not. There's patchy density there. Okay, next. Okay, a couple of CT scans just because we do them ad nauseum. And we do them for anything. We do them when you guys are bored, when you're sitting around your table discussing things. Why don't we do a CT scan? Sure, why not? Let's all right, we'll get a CT scan. What are we looking for? I don't know. What are you looking for? So this is a patient comes in with acute right upper quadrant pain. And we see a thick-walled gallbladder with multiple little stones. Right. But we also see a stone in the distal common duct. How do I know where it is? The trick is to follow the renal vein to the vena cava. And right above it is the head of the pancreas. And right in the middle of that is the distal common duct. So this is a classic site for a stone in the distal common duct in a patient with gallstones and pain. Now, look at the pancreas. Look at all this. This is all fluid. Fluid around the pancreas. Now, all you people are so good, you're not going to need the CAT scan to make pancreatitis. You're all going to do it without it. And you're just going to say, the amylase is elevated, the lipase is elevated, he's got acute abdominal pain, I don't need the CAT scan. Right? Wrong. You're all going to get the CAT scan anyway. Because sitting around the table said, well, why don't we get a CAT? Sure, let's get a CAT scan. All right. In any case, so this is classic cholecystitis, cholelithiasis, stone in the distal common duct, irregularity of the pancreas and fluid around it, consistent with pancreatitis. Okay? Next. Now, some of you are just coming to work and you're a Jacobi. Jacobi has a nickname. And the nickname for Jacobi is the JIT. The Jacobi Institute of Trauma. You may not see it, but the surgeons see it, and it's probably what we do most of. In this case, the patient had a stab wound, was given contrast in the stomach, and the stuff leaked out around the spleen. So this was a ruptured stomach with contrast leaking out around the spleen. Okay, next. Okay, I gave you one of the most common abnormalities to look for on a patient with acute abdominal pain in the ER. There are three. I've now given you one. This is the second. Right lower quadrant pain, tenderness, and a calcification sitting in the right lower quadrant with swelling around it. This is the famous appendicolith. Appendicitis. They're not all this easy, but most of them are. The third one, I didn't put it in, is diverticulitis. And that, you see the sigmoid colon usually with edema around it. And the diverticula, numerous diverticula. You can have diverticula without diverticulitis. That's not written in stone. Okay? Next. This was just to show what can happen. These are amorphous calcifications sitting on the peritoneum. When you see this kind of amorphous calcification, especially if there's stuff in the pelvis, you have to think of ovarian malignancy. Because one of the few mets that calcify are ovarian. And I threw this in only because I thought it was interesting. Okay, next. Give me the next one because it's a better picture. Okay. When x-raying an elbow for trauma, what you're looking for is the anterior triangle, which should come all the way down to here. No lucency posterior. When you see lucency posterior, and either the triangle bulges or you lose it, you have to think of fracture. When you think of fracture, most of the time it's going to be radial head. It's here, but it doesn't show up very well. I was going to put another one in, but traffic this morning was such that I was not about to have time to add things for today. Okay, next. By the way, it doesn't have to be the radial head. It just almost always is. And what you request, by the way, since you'll all rotate through the ER, is 45-degree obliques, so-called round-the-clock views, looking for the radial head fracture. If you see the fluid, look for the radial head fracture. Okay, again, this is not a great film. There's a lucency here through the scaphoid. The fracture of the wrist that everyone's scared of is the scaphoid fracture. Why? Because the circulation from the scaphoid is from anterior. So if you miss the fracture through the waist, which is the most common site, you get avascular necrosis of the proximal scaphoid, and the patient's wrist is never right again. So you really want to watch out for a scaphoid fracture. And again, if you're not sure, you angle the wrist and get 45-degree obliques, so-called round-the-clock views. Yes, you can CAT scan it, but that's sort of gilding the lily. Okay. Here was a case that happened to come up while I was putting this together. What we do on knee imaging is an AP and a lateral. This area above the patella is the suprapatella pouch. And when that gets dense like this, that's fluid in the suprapatella pouch. Does not mean fracture. Can, but doesn't have to. Now, the tendon that comes down to the patella is called the, anybody? Boy, you did take anatomy, didn't you guys? You did, right? First year? Wasn't there a period of time where you did anatomy? Nobody wants to own up to it. All right. Called the quadriceps tendon. I'm not even going to bother with muscles. But the rectus femoris muscle forms the patella, which is the largest sesamoid in the body. What's a sesamoid? It's a muscle. It's a bone in a tendon. A tendon bone. And the largest one is the sesamoid. The posterior one, which this patient doesn't have, and only 20% of people have, is called a fibula. Little dark one back here. And I had one of the students rotating me and was very angry that she didn't have a fibula. She felt she was being cheated, that everyone else had one, and she wanted one. But I couldn't give her one. However, looking at that, the lateral looked okay, but medially looked a little irregular to me. And there was big fluid. So I catted it, and there's a fracture here. If you're not sure, a CAT scan is the answer. An older patient, demineralized bone, particularly older women, looking for hip fractures, looking for pelvic fractures, CAT scan them. Or MR them. It's even better. CAT scan is, by the way, very available. MR is not. We have it 24/7, but it's a pain to do. Okay, next. Okay, years ago I used to come up here when I was in practice. I would come up one afternoon a week And I would have the medical students who at that time did a month of radiology in the third year. And they were always asked to give a lecture on something. And there were always about eight of them, and seven gave the same lecture every time. And the lecture was on SCIFI, slip capital femoral epiphysis. So if I heard that lecture one more time, because it was the same films, and they would talk to you about SCIFI. This is SCIFI. See how this head is smooth, and this space here, it's narrowed and flattened a little bit. This is SCIFI. Overweight males, 11, 12, 13. I would think it happens in females too now, but it was much more common in males. Next. Just another picture of the same thing. Next. Okay. Well, we're coming to the end, so I'll move it along. This is bowel gas, bowel gas, bowel gas. This is a vibrator that the patient shoved up his butt. I've seen them go all the way up to here. I've seen variations on a theme. One of the ER attendings now has all my films. I'll kill her if she doesn't give them back to me. But I have a whole series. Not all vibrators. There are all kinds of different things, and they all go different places. Okay. One of them was a brute bottle. Whatever. Next. Actually, this one comes out well. This was one of our HIV people who was also a coke addict. And she had her vial of coke and was trying to hide it from us. So what'd she do? No, she put it in her bra. And took the x-ray, and there it was, smiling at us. Okay. Next. This was just the degenerative change of the spine and pelvis. I don't know why I put this one in. SI joints are narrowed. More on the right side than the left. Doesn't look like that young a man. In a young patient, narrowed SI joints, you think of ankylosing spondylitis, which is a seronegative. See how good they are? Ask them this kind of thing, they're fine. Seronegative arthropathy. Others are? Ryder syndrome. Okay. Next. Oh, that's because I can't see. All right. Go back for a second. Because it's here. There's this rounded density in the pelvis. And it was getting very late. And our resident was getting very sleepy and dictated this as a dermoid of the pelvis. Now, two reasons why this is not a dermoid. Number one, it's a male. And dermoids are very unusual without having an ovary. Number two, this is exactly where a bladder is. Now, what's a dermoid? A dermoid is multiple cell layers, right? Hair, teeth, whatever. You see either of those here? No, I didn't either. Thereupon, I woke her up next and said, not a dermoid. Okay, is that it? Or they don't want my... No, okay. These are the two medical students who work with me to put most of this together. Chico is now a chief resident in Connecticut in radiology. And I think Eric is one of the chiefs at Montefiore now. And that's that.
Thank you.
Any questions? So what do I want to emphasize? What is it that I don't want you to miss, really? Pneumothorax, you don't want to miss. Small bowel obstruction, you don't want to miss. Subdural, epidural, subarachnoid hemorrhage. Someone else is going to look at this, not just you, while you're here. Once you leave here, it depends on what you do and where you go. But you have to know what those three look like, because some of them are surgical emergencies. Okay? As I say, hydropneumothorax, maybe, maybe not. But pneumothorax, certainly. Free air. What's the cause of free air? Bowel perforation, by far, 90-95%. What bowel perforates 90-95%? Stomach or duodenum, right? So if you're looking for free intraperitoneal air, on an erect film, it's easy. It's air under the diaphragm. How much air do you need? 5 cc's. All you got to do is enough to see that it's there. Where do you look on a supine view? Think a minute. Well, yeah, you want to be around there, but actually you look at the falciform ligament or ligamentum teres, which is in the left lobe of the liver, medial to lateral side. You look around the bowel wall. It's called four things. Air on both sides of the bowel wall, called a bas-relief sign, like a statue coming out of a wall, Rigler sign, corner sign. These are eponyms. Moira doesn't like that, so we don't use that. But, okay. But that's where you look on it. And there could be little air bubbles sitting in the right upper quadrant. The famous football sign you all read about, fine, if there's 10,000 cc's of air, but that's kind of unusual. So these are the common things. These are the things that I want you to know to look out, to look for. And if you're not sure, take it to the radiologist. There's somebody there all the time. Okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's fine. And that's yours.